History often moves slowly, almost imperceptibly. But sometimes, the world is forever changed by a single, brutal act of violence. Assassins tells the story set in these moments of chaos and fire. I'm Aslan Bahari, and on my new show, Assassins, I'll bring you the stories of assassinations that change the course of history. From seizing power to silencing dissidents, Assassins unpacks the moments in which someone decides that murder is the move. Search for Assassins with Aslan Bahari on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just a heads up, this episode contains graphic descriptions of violence. Being chased through your office by a man wielding a knife while your colleague lies bloodied on the floor sounds like a scene from a horror movie, but it happened in Adelaide and is in court right now. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to The Case Of.
Accused murderer Sean Michael Dunk handcuffed and against the wall.
Julie Seed died in an alleged stabbing at a Plimpton real estate agency.
Well, I went out with the intention to kill someone today.
SA's mental health system under scrutiny once again.
A trial now in motion to determine whether he was mentally competent when he allegedly committed the crime.
The day Sean Michael Dunk walked into the real estate agent's group office in Adelaide, 38-year-old Julie Seed wasn't even supposed to be there. It was a week before Christmas and the office was winding down. Sean Dunk is said to have demanded she get on the ground, struck her on the head, stabbed and killed her. Following this case is ABC court reporter Eva Blandis. Welcome, Eva.
Hi, Stocky. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. This is such a horrific case, but such an interesting one as well. And we'll get into the detail of kind of all of that in a moment. But before we get there, Sean Dunk is accused of murdering Julie Seed in December 2023, as I said, just before Christmas. Can you take us through a bit about what we know, what we've heard about this?
So the court heard that it was the afternoon of December 20. There were these two women in the office. It was winding down for Christmas. Sean Michael Dunk entered the office before hitting one of the women in the back of the head and then stabbed her before chasing the other woman through the office and stabbing her multiple times.
Wow. What happened to the second woman?
The second woman then was able to escape and ran out of the office screaming and got the attention of neighbouring businesses, and they then came to her aid.
Yeah, wow. And the guy in the middle of this, who's said to have entered the office and killed Julie Seed in the process of this, is Sean Dunk. Now, something really important for us to explain at the start of this story is that Sean isn't on trial for murder at this stage. We're kind of a step before that. There's no jury. This is just a judge deciding whether or not he is able to stand trial for the murder of Julie Seed. Is that right?
Yes. So it's all a bit complicated and it's not the usual processes. But what has happened is he has pleaded not guilty, and his lawyer has then said that his mental competence is going to come into question. Mm. So they provided reports to the court saying that he's not mentally competent. But the prosecution has actually come back and said, no, wait a minute, we have evidence that we say shows that he was mentally competent when he killed Julie Seed.
Yeah, okay. And Eva, just so I've got this kind of clear, with Mr. Dunk pleading not guilty, is he pleading not guilty because he says he didn't do it, or because that he's saying he wasn't mentally competent at the time?
So, yes, the argument is about whether he was mentally competent to know that he was committing murder.
Right. Got it. Okay. And through this process, we have had witnesses appearing in court. You know, looking through some of the reporting, it seems like a scaled back version of what we would see during a murder trial with fewer witnesses and a bit less evidence. But one of the witnesses who we have had is the woman who was able to kind of escape, who was also in the office that day. Susan Scardino, as you mentioned, she kind of escaped through the front door, was able to get people to come to her aid. How did she describe the interaction, describing Dunk coming into the office that day?
Well, Sue likened it to a movie, like a bank robber in a movie confronting these people. She said Dunk was extremely calm. She said it escalated. He ordered them to get on the ground. Julie Seed apparently complied and got on the ground. But then when Sue realised that it was more serious than just what she thought was a robbery, she got up and ran.
Yeah, and Sean Dunk is said to have hit Julie Seed in the back of the head, I think with like a meat tenderizer or something. Is that something that Sue witnessed?
Correct. So Sue witnessed Julie being struck in the back of the head with that meat tenderizer. Now, I think that's sort of the main trigger for when she realized, oh, this is more than just a robbery. Mm. And that's when she ran. And it's then the prosecution can't actually then say when Julie Seed was stabbed, but we know that she was stabbed between then and when Sue was chased and then stabbed.
Yeah. And I mean, we're talking about how she kind of ran through this office. She got a chair between her and Dunk at one point so she could get out, I think, the front door of the office and was able to call for people to help. I mean, were people able to come and assist her at this point?
Yeah, so people were able to come and help from what has been explained in court. It's in an area where there are quite a few other officers. Mm. And it was actually a man from a business above the real estate company that came down and helped and intervened and actually had a conversation with Dunk.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got fewer witnesses than we normally have during a murder trial, for example. But in a murder trial, you'd expect kind of all of these other people to be called and to describe what they saw on these days. Are we hearing from them at this stage?
No. So we're not hearing from them, but we have at this stage heard in the prosecution opening, we've actually heard the prosecutor refer to some statements. One of those include that man that did intervene when Sue ran out of the office. Mm. And he gave quite, by the sounds of what was said, he gave quite a chilling account of what happened. He also seemed to describe Mr. Dunk as being quite calm, and he was telling the man that he was all good and whatnot. He then dropped his weapons by the sounds and then went on to actually tell that man that he'd always wanted to do that.
Wow, that he's always wanted to kill someone.
Yes.
Oh, God. And, I mean, that's something that I think he's repeated to police as well, hasn't he? Because the court's heard parts of police interviews that seem body-worn footage. What has the court heard about what he's told police when he's being interviewed, when he's in custody?
Yeah, so the court was actually shown the police interviews. So they've been shown two police interviews so far. One is from in the hours after he was arrested, and the other was a few months on. But in the interview, well, in both interviews actually, he says to police that he has always wanted to kill. At one stage, he even says that he wanted to know what it would be like to be a serial killer. It is quite shocking when you're sitting in there hearing that. Mm. The thing that I think really got people on the edge of their seats the most was that he actually tells police at one stage on the same day as the alleged murder that if he had the chance, he would have done it properly and would have got gloves and would have actually killed a few people.
Oh, God. Yeah, it sounds just so horrific. Did we hear much about how he'd kind of prepared for this, what he was doing in the lead up to it and kind of what offices and buildings he was going into on that day?
So what we heard is actually that he had, before we get to him scoping out offices, he had actually in the days before stolen the meat tenderizer and knife from a supermarket. He had then stashed them by the River Torrens, which is the main river in Adelaide, and had then returned that morning to collect them. He then went down to very many beachside suburbs in Adelaide and was scoping out businesses. He said there were some businesses he looked at that he didn't think were appropriate for his crime because there were too many people and that he was just looking for an easy target. Now, it appears that he has gone, well, he says he's gone to the real estate business because he just saw Julie at the front. He wasn't exactly sure that there was that second person, but he deemed that as an appropriate target. He then apparently, allegedly, walked around the block to psych himself up before going back in. So he'd actually, gone in beforehand. and had said hello and said, oh, sorry, I'm in the wrong spot. And then that's when he left and went around the block and went back in.
Eva, do we get any insight into his potential motivations from those interviews?
We do. He tells police he wasn't a good person. He also mentions, and he mentions this as well, we must note, to the man who intervenes out the front of the office, that he's being diagnosed with testicular cancer earlier that year. He also says he felt dead inside. And as we touched on before, he said it was something he always wanted to do.
Yeah, right. Is he likely to give evidence during this process, or the interviews and the things that we're hearing with police, the only time we'll hear from Sean Dunk?
Yeah, this is in this process, this is the only time we'll hear from him. We will be moving on now to the closing submissions. So we may, although we will not hear from him, we may hear from him through his lawyer, so to speak. So we may get a bit more insight of what was going through his head at that time, but we won't, unfortunately, actually hear from him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm keen to get an idea of how this next step unfolds in just a moment. But, I mean, this is a trial or process about whether or not Sean Dunk is mentally competent to stand trial. So, as you would expect, there was a psych who was called to give evidence as part of this. Who was that, and what did we hear from them?
Well, there are actually a few, but one of the ones of note was forensic psychiatrist William Brereton, and he told the court that from his assessment of the videos and the evidence, really, that Mr. Dunk's actions were consistent with him being mentally incompetent.
Right.
So it is quite interesting in that way that we do have esteemed psychiatrists saying they are of that opinion, yet we still have the prosecution saying no, they believe that he was mentally competent.
Yeah, and as well as the assessment from the psychiatrist and these experts who've been called, I mean, was Dunk getting any care around this time or any support?
Well, from what the court has heard, there was no consistent care. He had, however, been in and out of the Royal Adelaide Hospital, which is in the city in Adelaide, for mental health treatment, saying he had thoughts of self-harm, etc. But we were yesterday shown in court a police interview, a body-worn from body-worn vision, of Dunk when he enters a police station on the 5th of December. Now, that is just 15 days before this crime allegedly happened. Mm. And in that body-worn vision, you can hear him telling police that he wants to be locked up so he wouldn't be a danger to anyone. Then we also hear from another police officer captured in that vision that he had told her that he was suffering delusions and was worried he was going to act out on a person in the public. Mm. So that, I'm sure, will be playing into that whole argument.
Mm. Had he been diagnosed with anything? Has there been any conversation about any mental health issues that he was known to have been dealing with?
So he wasn't diagnosed with anything beforehand that we've yet heard. However, he was later diagnosed with schizophrenia, and that's where this whole issue of the mental competency comes into play. Mm. So he was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was in James Nash House, which is our secure mental health facility where people suffering from mental health issues go, as well as people charged with crimes. Mm. And while in there was diagnosed, and the prosecution say that he wasn't suffering from the schizophrenia at the time of the crime, it was actually the stress of being incarcerated that triggered it. So it's a sort of about a timeline here, really.
Mm. Yeah, that is fascinating, the way that the prosecution is kind of approaching this inconsiderate, because you know the way that you've been talking this through, that you through this, it's easy to kind of conceive of one view of what's happened here and have an opinion about what you think might have unfolded, and then you hear the way that the prosecution is framing that, talking about the timeline, I guess, and it's a really interesting point that I guess the judge will now have to decide on. We had the evidence finishing yesterday. What is the process from here?
So now we've had a date set for March 4th, so that's when it will be back in court, and we will hear closing submissions from the prosecution and the defence. They've set a day aside, as it looks like the prosecution will go for most of the day. I'm not sure at this stage how long defence will go, but I'm sure that will be a very convoluted process given all the complexities in this case. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all unfolds.
And what is happening that day? So that's closing submissions. That's basically like what you would have at the end of a murder trial, for example, where you have the kind of the broad points spelt out by each side on how they say this unfolded and why they want a ruling one way or the other. Is that right?
Correct. That's my understanding, that it just wrapping up all the evidence and putting a bow on it practically. So I think, yeah, it will be interesting to sort of see, given especially the defence side of that, given everything that's been put before the court, we'll get a chance to sort of hear more from them, seeing we haven't heard a lot at all from them.
Yeah. And I mean, there's the kind of closing submissions. Are there written submissions that are made between now and that date as well, where there's kind of the parties gathering various documents and other evidence that they'll be submitting to the judge for consideration?
There are. So they will actually be submitted the week before, so at the end of February. So that will then also allow the judge to have a look at that and wrap her head around that before also hearing those oral submissions, which will, of course, guide her and assist with that.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess on one side, we have him potentially going to a trial if he is deemed mentally competent. What happens on the other side if he's not?
If he's not mentally competent, he will then be sentenced under the Mental Health Act, which will see him sentenced to a limiting term, which is similar to a jail term. However, he'll be serving it in a mental health facility and with the support of that community.
Right. Okay. So it's not like he's released or something if he's deemed not mentally competent to stand trial.
No, not at all.
Eva, thank you so much for joining us on the Case Of to help us learn about this process, to explain kind of what's being worked through in the Adelaide Supreme Court at the moment. It's a really interesting process and one we haven't dove into on the Case Of previously. As well as that, we may be hearing from you quite soon, because there's a murder trial in Adelaide that is just about to start. One of the strangest stories I have come across. It's hard to believe that it's even real. Can you take us through what's unfolded and what might be happening here?
Yeah, so there's a trial starting into the murder of Geoffrey McLean, whose remains were found in a wheelie bin in Adelaide's northern suburbs. Now, there's two people standing trial for murder. That's Cherie Glastonbury and her partner, Mark Murphy.
Yeah, it's a kind of wild story. We'll be able to tell you a lot more once we get through prosecution openings and the trial starts proper. We're expecting that the next day or so. So we'll be bringing you an episode on Thursday with all the details from the opening statements there. And then we'll be following this case with Eva as it unfolds. So Eva, looking forward to chatting some more.
Looking forward to it.
To make sure you're at the front of the queue for anything the Case Of related or anything ABC Audio related, grab yourself ABC Listen. It's the best place to listen to all of the content that is made from the ABC, not just by myself and the Case Of team. So grab yourself that. It's in the whatever app store you find yourself in, also available online. And if you are using a different podcast platform, you have the ability and the power to rate and review the Case Of. So please jump in and do that, because it makes it so much easier for other people to find us. And I think we'll all agree that the trial coming up with Eva is something that I think a lot of you are going to want to hear about. The Case Of is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by Eva Blundis and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the land of the Kaurna and Wurundjeri people.